It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good and bad martinis today. Five good martinis in a row, Jim. I think that's a pretty good streak. I'll take it. Yesterday was a whole lot of fun, and today is also going to be a whole lot of fun, especially when you compare the two good ones to the not good one. Jim, let's start with news that's pretty fresh here on Thursday morning. This is NBC News. Iraq captured five Islamic State commanders after its intelligence services lured them into crossing from neighboring Syria, Iraqi State TV reported Wednesday. It described the five as, quote, some of the most wanted, unquote, leaders of ISIS. They were named as Saddam al-Jamal, Mohammed al-Qadir, Ismail al-Althwai, Omar al-Karbouli, and Assam al-, yeah, I'm sure I'm getting these pronunciations all correct, and they were shown in yellow prisoner uniforms. Al-Ithawi, a top aide to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was captured in February by Turkish authorities and handed over to Iraqi agents, a security advisor to the Iraqi government said on Thursday. This is the best part. Iraqi agents then used the Telegram messaging app on his mobile phone to lure four commanders from the group to cross the border from Syria into Iraq and into a trap. According to security advisor Hisham al-Hashim, he told Reuters on Thursday, he said the operation was carried out in cooperation with U.S. forces, part of an American-led coalition fighting against the Islamic State on both sides of the Iraqi-Syrian border. So, Jim, the Iraqis look like they're a lot more competent than they were a few years ago. The U.S. is coordinating well over there. Another big win for the U.S.
You know, Greg, it is good news. It does demonstrate a new skill and capability in the Iraqi intelligence and national security organizations over there. I want to say they make it look easy, but let's face it, capturing these guys and tricking them into a trap like that is way easier than pronouncing their names, apparently. The thing that which kind of jumps out here is President Trump tweeted out, captured five biggest leaders of ISIS shortly before the news broke at the New York Times. And of course, everybody kind of leans forward and says, did we get Baghdadi? Baghdadi, of course, is the supreme leader of ISIS, has only been seen in public a couple of times. That would really be seen as a truly decisive one. We did not get Baghdadi. We got one of his aides. I think that is a significant victory and worth celebrating as is. When you capture these five guys, it's got to be crushing to ISIS's morale. And right now, ISIS's morale is almost as crushed as they are, as they no longer have anything resembling an actual functioning Islamic State. They've fled to the mountains. Continuing efforts to track them, bomb them, and kind of remove them from the picture. Capturing these guys, I think, does make it a little more likely that someday we will see Baghdadi either dead or in chains. It is kind of remarkable, I mean, how much ISIS dominated both the U.S. foreign policy perspective and I think the, you know, the worries of Americans when we're seeing things like San Bernardino and Orlando and things like that. It's kind of remarkable how much news cycles can go by for weeks at a time without mentioning ISIS. It's been a while since we've had one of these, hey, head turning, you know, we captured some terrorist operations. I think it's worth giving a little bit of a shout out to the Iraqis and also to apparently the Turks involved. And we've had a lot of problems with Erdogan and the Turkish government in recent years. My understanding, and obviously reports like this indicate that for all the problems, cooperation against ISIS and counterterrorism operations, cooperation has continued pretty solidly on those fronts. And so to the extent they want an attaboy from Americans, and considering their internal politics, they may not want those. We will give it to them. If not, we will say we will denounce them if that makes them feel better.
We'll take the good news. Let's move on to more good news. And some of us are bleary-eyed after the homecoming for the three Americans who had been detained, held prisoner or hostage, whatever terminology you like to use, in North Korea. They came home to Joint Base Andrews a little before 3 a.m. The three freed prisoners are Korean-American missionary Kim Dong-chul, who was detained since 2015, Kim Song-duk, also known as Tony Kim, who spent a month teaching at the foreign-funded Pyongyang University of Science and Technology, and then one of his colleagues at that same school, Kim Hak-song, who was also detained in 2017. On their way back, they issued a brief statement saying, quote, "We would like to express our deep appreciation to the United States government, President Trump, Secretary Pompeo, and the people of the United States for bringing us home. We thank God and all our families and friends who prayed for us in our return. God bless America, the greatest nation in the world." President Trump was there at Andrews to greet them early in the morning. He then stopped briefly to speak with reporters and said a number of things. First of all, talking about how great it is to have these Americans home again.
"They're great people. You know, I got to speak to them on the plane. These are great people. They've been through a lot, but it's a great honor. But the true honor is going to be if we have a victory in getting rid of nuclear weapons."
And Trump said at that point that we'll know soon where the summit will be. We already know that now this morning. It's June 12th. It's in Singapore. Then he had these comments, actually thanking Kim Jong-un for freeing these people ahead of schedule.
"We very much appreciate that he allowed them to go before the meeting. It was sort of understood that we'd be able to get these three terrific people during the meeting and bring them home after the meeting. And he was nice in letting them go before the meeting. I mean, frankly, we didn't think this was going to happen, and it did."
And the president also remembering the parents of an American who did not return in the same healthy way that these men appear to have.
"I must tell you, I want to pay my warmest respects to the parents of Otto Warmbier, who is a great young man who really suffered. And his parents have become friends of ours. They are spectacular people. And I just want to pay my respects."
Jim, for anybody who's seen the images of these prisoners when they stepped out from the door of the plane to flashing the V signs with their fingers, and it's just a great reminder that as frustrated as we get with the system here sometimes, the greatness of America compared to not only where they were, but to so many other places around the world. It was a great reminder for us, and hopefully a sign that there might even be bigger announcements to come.
Indeed, Greg, and also it's a kind of also a reminder of how quickly the circumstances can change. I mean, honestly, I could have done without Trump saying how great it was of Kim Jong-un to release these guys. He did put one of them in a labor camp. And there is a school of thought that argues you probably shouldn't give a hostile foreign regime too much credit for undoing something that they shouldn't have done in the first place. But with that in mind, as I said yesterday, this is an indication that they are taking now tangible steps to build trust and build goodwill in advance of the summit in North Korea. And it's worth noting that it now has a date. They have a location of Singapore. Something that seemed like kind of an off-the-cuff foreign policy decision when those South Korean officials visited the White House is taking shape. Right now, as we speak, I'm looking at the front page of the Wall Street Journal. There is a picture of Kim Jong-un and our new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, shaking hands and smiling, and just kind of a fascinating indicator that it was not that long ago we were hearing terms like fire and fury and you know, this sense that the United States and North Korea were inching closer and closer to a military conflict. The rhetoric was getting more heated and more hostile. We saw these constant missile tests and nuclear tests from the North Korean regime. Look, North Korea has now taken several steps that are tangible. They're not just, you know, happy talk words or something. Now, does this mean this is all going to end with a resolution the way we like? It's no guarantees. Most of these tangible efforts that they've taken could be undone pretty quickly. They could probably test another ICBM at any time they wanted to. There are still, as I understand it, something in the neighborhood of 200 Americans, at least as of last summer, living in North Korea. The U.S. has discouraged Americans from being there. At any given moment, the North Korean regime could take more prisoners, hostages, bargaining chips, however you want to describe them. All of that having been said, this was a remarkable sight to see in the wee early hours of this morning. The Trump administration does deserve credit for getting this and for this. I think there's a certain amount of the president's instinct for stagecraft does come in handy. And look, we are seeing a slight improvement in the public's mood, people saying the country is on the right track. I can't help but wonder if some of this is, if, you know, I think it was Ala Pundit at Hot Air who said, if not a peace dividend, then a pre-peace dividend, a sense of optimism about this. Seeing U.S. and North Korea discuss things is a little more reassuring than hearing the constant threats going back and forth. So again, don't want to make too much out of it, but it was a wonderful sight to see this morning and another reason for at least mild optimism about avoiding a conflict on the Korean Peninsula.
So we got key ISIS figures in custody. We've got American hostages freed. We've got the U.S. pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal this week. Jim, if this is what Trump meant by getting tired of winning, I'm not tired. Hopefully we have a lot more successes like this along the way. But let's take a look at what liberals are doing while the president's doing those things. This is USA Today. New homes and low-rise apartment buildings across California would include solar panels under first-in-the-nation rules approved Wednesday by the California Energy Commission. The rules now go to the State Building Standards Commission, where they were expected to easily win approval. The requirements, which would go into effect in 2020, could add more than $10,000 to the construction costs of new homes, the commission says. Some builders say the cost could be more than twice that. But the commission and most builders agree that the costs should be more than made up in energy savings over the life of the solar energy system. And the plan has drawn generally positive reviews from the construction industry. Some conservatives were not so enthusiastic, noting that the state already has some of the nation's most expensive housing markets. A National Association of Realtors survey for the fourth quarter of 2017 listed four California markets among the nation's five most expensive. So, Jim, once again, California is mandating how people have to behave starting in 2020. They've got to have solar panels because we can't be trusted otherwise.
You know, Greg, as you look around the state of California, its heights and its lows, the mountains to the coasts, San Francisco down to San Diego. If there's one problem we see in California community, one community after another, it's that the housing costs are just too darn cheap. It just is too easy to live in California. There probably are some struggling communities in the Central Valley or places like that. Maybe there are cheap housing, but certainly in most of the cities and most of the nice suburbs and, you know, almost any place you'd actually want to live in California, the housing prices are just ungodly expensive. And here comes the environmentalist with a happy proposal to make everything $10,000, $20,000 more expensive. The other question is, Greg, so under this, if you have an old house that doesn't have solar panels, I assume you're not required to add them to your house, right?
Not yet. This is only for new buildings starting in 2020.
So undoubtedly, if you own a house in California right now, you love this plan because it makes building a new house more expensive, and your house is now a better value because anybody who wants to build a new house is going to have to pay more, and you can get away with not having a solar panel on it. If you want to have a solar panel on your house? Go ahead, be my guest. Go right. You know, I'm not going to stop you, presuming it's safely installed and all that kind of stuff. But this is kind of the creeping nanny state mentality found in California and a whole lot of places across the country, where everything that is good, first it's, you know, encouraged through like a tax incentive, and then it becomes mandatory. Then you must do this. Like you are being a bad person by wanting to build a house without a solar panel. It is kind of ludicrous. I think it's kind of indicative of the mentality in California right now. There is no sympathy for the person who's just getting by or the person who wants to buy their first home or something like that. I mean, in fact, you look at the homelessness problem in places like San Francisco, Silicon Valley. Look, it's great that you've got, you know, innovative companies out there. It's great that you've got beautiful views and wonderful weather. And the problem is what made California stop being America's frontier is people stop being able to afford living out there. And that's why you see people moving back out into Texas, into southern states, a lot of red states, not exclusively. You know, the Coloradans will complain about Californication of their on the one hand, I suppose I should believe, okay, it's a states or laboratories democracy. If California wants to try what strikes me as a dumb idea like this, they should be free to do so. On the other hand, it just kind of seems like a mentality in government of forcing people to do things because you've decided they're a good thing instead of merely encouraging it or creating an incentive for it. It's a bad idea and you know, should be discouraged. But it's interesting when you hear, you know, the tech world talk about California being the future of the United States or the cutting edge. The future doesn't look very free, Greg. And I don't just mean, you know, in terms of the costs. I mean, just in terms of your ability to decide whether or not you want a solar panel on your roof of your home in a state like California.
Exactly. And this is so part and parcel of the liberal agenda. They don't trust us to be able to negotiate our own health care plan. They got all involved in that. They don't want us to be able to choose our schools. They don't want us to be able to determine how we build our houses. They want to tell us how to think, how to speak. They want to slap all these regulations on us. Other than being okay with people terminating their unborn children, what choice do they actually like giving us?
Pro-choice on this menu of two options.
And just as a heads up to people exiting states because of all this, you can leave and go to freer states, but then don't vote for the same policies that got you in trouble in the first place. Can we ask that much?
Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Then stop doing that. Doctor, when I vote for these candidates, I keep finding higher cost of living. Then stop voting for those candidates. So that's where we are, Greg.
Amazing. So there's your contrast. What's going on the right and what's going on the left. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.